Ready to unlock the secrets of public speaking?
I think we all are.
We're diving deep into Dale Carnegie's The Art of Public Speaking. You know, it's considered a classic for a reason.
Definitely a must-read for anyone who wants to be a better communicator.
We'll be pulling out those golden nuggets of wisdom to help you become more confident and compelling.
Those timeless insights.
Exactly. So instead of just skimming the surface, we're going to really dig into the core of his teachings.
Sounds good.
See how they apply even in today's world. Now, where to even begin with a book this packed with wisdom?
Well, I think it's smart how Carnegie starts by tackling stage fright head on.
Oh, absolutely.
That's something almost everyone experiences.
Even seasoned speakers can get those pre-speech jitters sometimes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But what I find really interesting is that Carnegie doesn't just tell us to, you know, like, calm down
right.
or fake it till you make it.
Exactly.
He has this very specific approach to conquering the sphere.
He really emphasizes the importance of preparation and practice, but not just in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. You know, he uses this analogy of swimming to illustrate his point.
Okay.
He says, just like you wouldn't just jump into the deep end without knowing how to swim.
Right.
You shouldn't step onto a stage without adequate preparation.
That makes total sense.
Right.
So then what does adequate preparation even look like when it comes to public speaking? What does that actually mean?
Well, for Carnegie, it goes beyond just memorizing your lines or practicing your delivery.
Mm.
He says that true confidence comes from having something valuable to say.
Okay.
He even says the higher we go in the scale of life,
mm-hmm.
the more susceptible we are to the suffering of stage fright.
Oh, wow.
It's almost like the more successful we become,
yeah.
the more pressure we feel to perform.
It's almost counterintuitive.
Yeah.
You'd think that with more experience, you'd become less afraid, but maybe it's the opposite.
Yeah, it could be.
The stakes get higher.
Exactly.
The spotlight gets brighter.
Right.
And then suddenly,
those nerves.
The nerves creep back in.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's where having a deep understanding of your topic is super important. When you're genuinely passionate and you put in the time to really understand it, that inner confidence kind of radiates outwards.
Yeah.
It's not about faking it.
Right.
It's about knowing your stuff.
You got to do the work.
You got to do the work.
We can relate to that. When I'm presenting on a topic that I'm actually invested in, those butterflies, they kind of calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that deep knowledge is an anchor. It's grounding me amidst any anxiety.
Right. Exactly. So the first takeaway here, conquering stage fright starts with having something meaningful to say.
Love that.
It's about fueling your speech with passion and expertise.
Okay. Now, once we've tackled that stage fright, Carnegie dives into another super crucial aspect of effective speaking.
What's that?
And that is the power of emphasis.
Yes. This is where he really starts to break down the mechanics of speech.
Okay.
He argues that not every word carries the same weight. Just like we naturally emphasize certain syllables when we say city names.
Mm.
Think about it. Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
Or Minneapolis.
You wouldn't pronounce those the same way.
Exactly. And just like that, certain words in our speech deserve more emphasis. It creates impact. And it helps us avoid that monotonous, robotic delivery.
I'm starting to see where he's going with this, but how do we actually determine which words to emphasize? There's got to be a system.
It can't be random.
No.
Absolutely not. Think of it like this. You're reading a children's book to a child, and you're emphasizing every single word. Thick, big, red, ball, bounced, high.
Yeah, they'd be asleep.
Exactly. But if you choose certain words to emphasize,
okay.
You can create rhythm. You can create drama.
Right.
The big red ball bounced IGH.
Okay, that's a great analogy. But how do we do it in a more formal setting?
Well, one way is to think about your key message. Which words are absolutely essential to understanding your point?
So it's about identifying the heart of your message and then using emphasis to highlight those core words.
Precisely. For example, let's say your message is, we need to act now to protect our environment.
Okay.
You could emphasize act and now to create that sense of agency.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Or if your message is, we can achieve anything if we work together.
Okay.
You might emphasize achieve and together to really inspire hope and collaboration.
That's a great point.
And the beauty is you don't have to overthink it. If you're speaking with conviction, it'll come naturally.
Yes.
It's about tapping into that passion and letting it flow.
Okay. I'm starting to see how these little details can really make a difference.
They do.
Now, speaking of keeping things engaging, Carnegie also talks about the importance of variety in both pitch and tempo.
He does.
He makes it clear that a monotonous delivery can be, well...
a real snooze fest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He even says in this great quote about memorized speeches, in memorized speeches, you are liable to speak the words and then think what they mean. And many speakers seem to trouble very little even about that.
Ouch.
Ouch, right. So what he's saying is when we're too focused on those memorized words, we lose that connection to the actual meaning.
Exactly.
And then that lack of connection translates to a flat, unengaging delivery.
Yeah.
Okay, so how does varying pitch and tempo play into this?
Think about it. Would you ever sing a song on just one note?
Right. That'd be so boring.
Pretty boring.
Yeah.
Same with speaking.
Right.
Changing our pitch keeps things interesting. He even compares it to singing up and down the scale.
Okay, so it's about adding those natural inflections like we use in everyday conversations.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
And then there's tempo, the speed at which we speak.
Right.
Carnegie suggests what he calls the shotgun remedy.
The shotgun remedy.
Yeah, which basically means varying your speed.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So instead of speaking at a constant pace,
yes,
we should be speeding up and slowing down at certain points.
Exactly. Think about a speaker who drones on at the same pace. Even if it's interesting, it's hard to stay focused. I've definitely zoned out in audiences where I felt like it was just monotone, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So how do we know when to speed up and when to slow down? How do we decide that?
Think of it like punctuation for your speech.
Okay.
You might speed up to build excitement or convey urgency.
Right.
Then you might slow down to emphasize a point or create a dramatic pause.
Ah, so it's like adding commas and periods. It adds nuance and depth.
It does.
Okay, I like that.
He shares an example from a play where a sudden tempo change made a particular line so memorable that he still remembered it 6 months later.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So it highlights the power of tempo to create that lasting impact.
Uh-huh.
Okay, shotgun remedy added to the toolkit.
Right.
This next one really intrigued me. The eloquence of silence, utilizing pauses.
I love this one. It's so powerful.
He sees pauses as more than just moments of silence.
Right.
They're tools to shape meaning and impact.
Exactly. He even says silence is one of the most eloquent things in the world.
That's a bold statement. How can silence be eloquent?
Well, think about it. A well-placed pause creates emphasis, it builds anticipation, and it gives your audience time to digest.
Mm.
You're giving your words room to breathe.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
So how do we master the eloquence of silence? It seems counterintuitive to add silence to our speech.
It really does.
But he says that silence, when used strategically, actually enhances the power of our words.
Okay.
He uses a beautiful example of redwood trees.
I love his nature analogies. What's the redwood tree connection?
He says that just like those majestic redwood trees take their time to grow tall and strong, pauses give our words time to resonate with the audience.
Oh, wow.
They allow for that sense of weight and significance.
Okay, so instead of rushing through,
yes,
we should give our words the space to land with the listeners.
Exactly.
I like that. Imagine you're telling a story
uh-huh.
or delivering crucial information.
Right.
If you add a pause before or after,
yes,
it allows the audience to absorb the full impact.
It creates a space for reflection and understanding.
It's brilliant. Okay, I'm starting to see how even silence can be impactful.
Right.
It's like the spaces between notes in music, just as important as the notes themselves.
A beautiful way to put it.
Okay, moving on, we get to the heart of any great speech.
What's that?
Feeling and enthusiasm.
Yeah, this is where Carnegie gets to the core of what moves people.
Yeah.
He argues that we need to connect with our emotions to really connect with our audiences.
Okay.
He's saying we make many decisions based on feeling, not just logic.
Challenging that idea of the purely rational speaker.
Right.
Someone who just presents facts and figures without any emotion.
Exactly.
He's highlighting that human element, that power of emotion.
Uh-huh.
And he shares some powerful quotes from Emerson and Carlyle, both emphasizing enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So it's not enough to just have the knowledge. You need that passion, that fire in your belly to really ignite your words.
It's contagious.
It is, yeah. Think about it. Would you rather listen to a speaker who's clearly bored with their topic?
No.
Or someone who's like brimming with enthusiasm?
I'd pick the enthusiastic one every time.
Right. And that's what Carnegie's getting at.
It creates a ripple effect.
Yeah, exactly.
That extends to the audience.
I love that. But how do we actually bring more of our authentic selves, our passion, to our speeches.
Well, Carnegie is very clear about the importance of sincerity here.
Right.
Genuine emotion can't be faked.
No. People can spot a phony.
Yeah.
It's like that saying, people may doubt what you say, but they'll believe what you do.
Right.
If your actions match your words, that authenticity shines through.
Exactly. So it starts with choosing topics that excite you, topics that light you up.
Okay.
Then it's about allowing yourself to be fully present with those emotions when you speak.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to let that passion show.
Makes sense. It's about tapping into that spark and letting it ignite your words.
Exactly. Which leads perfectly into Carnegie's next point.
Yeah.
Mastering gestures.
Because when we're excited about something, it naturally shows through our body language, right?
Uh-huh.
He believes gestures should be natural and spontaneous.
Yes.
Not overly rehearsed or distracting.
Exactly. He's not advocating for robotic, overly choreographed gestures.
Yeah.
They should flow from our emotions and our thoughts.
But at the same time, we don't want to be, you know, flailing our arms around like we're trying to fly.
Right, right.
There's got to be a balance.
Exactly. It's that balance between spontaneity and intentionality.
Right.
He uses a hilarious anecdote about a gesture class.
Oh, I love his anecdotes. Tell me more.
Well, this class was working on a scene from Henry VIII.
Okay.
Where the cardinal says, farewell. A long farewell to all my greatness.
Yeah.
They had this manual with a gesture for every occasion. And for this one, it said to throw your arms out wide like you're saying goodbye to a vast empire.
Oh, no. That completely misses the mark. It's like turning defeat into a celebration.
So totally out of sync with the emotion.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's precisely the point he's making.
Look,
while he believes in the power of gestures to enhance our speech, he cautions against using them in a way that feels forced or unnatural.
So are we supposed to just avoid gestures altogether?
Not at all. He believes that practice helps you internalize effective gestures,
yeah.
Just like learning proper pronunciation.
Okay.
It's about finding that sweet spot where our movements enhance our words without distracting from them.
Right. We don't want to be robotic, but we also don't want to be, you know, just random.
Uh-huh.
It's about finding that harmony, that balance between our internal state and our outward expression.
Precisely. And that leads us perfectly to his discussion of what he considers the ideal method of speaking.
Which is?
Extemporaneous speaking.
Yes. Now, I think a lot of people hear extemporaneous and they think, just wing it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not what he means at all.
Absolutely not.
Oh,
it requires thorough preparation. But it allows for flexibility and adaptability in the moment.
So you have a structure, but you're not afraid to deviate if you need to.
Exactly. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
You're prepared, but you can still connect with your audience in a more authentic way.
I love that. It's like having a roadmap, but being open to exploring those interesting side roads.
Uh-huh.
Now, before we wrap up this first part of our deep dive, one more point from Carnegie. The power of thought. Fueling your speeches.
This is where we start to see the depth of his approach.
Yes.
He's not just teaching techniques.
Right.
He's urging us to cultivate a well-stocked mind.
Yeah.
That's the foundation for effective speaking. He uses that analogy of an artesian well, drawing from unseen depths to create this abundance of ideas.
So our mind should be these overflowing reservoirs of knowledge
yeah.
that we can tap into when we speak.
Exactly. He even talks about Dr. Hillis, a renowned speaker known for his wide range of knowledge.
Okay.
He could speak on various subjects seemingly without effort.
Wow.
Weaving together insights from geology, plant life, chemistry, mythology, literature, you name it.
It's like his mind was a bottomless well of information.
Yes. So Carnegie is saying we should become like artesian wells,
mm-hmm.
constantly filling our minds with knowledge and experiences.
Not just having a few talking points memorized.
No.
It's about cultivating a deep understanding.
Yes, a deep understanding of the world around us.
The more we read,
uh-huh.
observe, experience,
yeah. yes.
the more we have to draw upon when we speak.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm officially on a mission to become an artesian well of knowledge.
Me too.
That's a wrap for part one of our deep dive into the art of public speaking.
Tune in next time. We'll explore how to transform these insights into actionable strategies.
We'll be back soon.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome back.
Back to our deep dive into the art of public speaking with Dale Carnegie.
You know, last time we were talking about having that reserve power.
Right.
That fuels a truly captivating speech.
It all starts with a well-stocked mind.
And Carnegie uses that great example of Dr. Hillis.
Yes, Dr. Who.
He could speak on so many different topics.
And he did it so effortlessly. It wasn't just how much he knew.
Yeah.
It was the way he could connect all those different ideas.
Yeah.
He gave this one lecture where he wove together geology, plant life, chemistry, mythology, literature, history, law.
It's amazing.
It really is.
It's like he saw how everything was interconnected.
And he used it all.
He drew upon that vast network of knowledge.
Exactly.
And Carnegie calls this the Artusian well approach.
Yeah, I love that.
Our minds should be like overflowing wells of knowledge.
Your experience.
Full of these rich insights that we can tap into.
And how do we become an Artusian well speaker?
Yeah, right. How do we do that?
By being curious.
Oh.
Throughout our lives.
So it's about always being engaged and learning, actively seeking new information.
New experiences.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not just passively absorbing information. It's actively engaging with it.
Yes. Making connections.
Okay.
Finding ways to integrate those new things into how we understand the world.
Okay. So the more we do that.
The more we have to draw upon when we speak.
So it's not just about memorizing facts.
No, not at all.
It's about having that deep well to pull from.
That depth of knowledge translates to authority and authenticity.
Okay, that makes sense.
And it resonates with an audience.
Yeah. It's like that saying, the more you know, the more you realize you know nothing.
I love that one.
It's about being curious and constantly exploring.
It keeps our mind sharp and our speech is engaging.
Okay, so we've talked about the importance of a well-stocked mind. But what about being efficient with our prep time?
Right. Carnegie actually has this whole section on that.
Oh, really?
Conservation of time and preparation.
Okay.
He gives some great examples of how famous speakers like Daniel Webster and Patrick Henry really maximize their time.
Okay.
For example, Webster would read while he was working at a sawmill.
Wow, that's impressive.
And Henry would spend days just wandering in nature, absorbing ideas and impressions.
So they were always in that mode of gathering fuel?
Yeah.
Even when they weren't actively working on a speech?
Exactly. And it shows that we can all find little opportunities.
Yeah.
To learn and prepare, even when we're busy.
Even in the midst of our everyday lives.
Yeah. Being intentional with our time.
I like that.
Recognizing that learning doesn't have to be in a classroom.
It can be those little micro learning moments, right?
Right. Exactly.
Like listening to a podcast during your commute.
Reading an article.
Or even just observing.
Just observing.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about having a well-stocked mind. Being efficient with our preparation.
Uh-huh.
But how do we even choose a topic for a speech?
Well, there are so many possibilities, right?
There are.
Where do we even start? Carnegie has a framework.
Oh, okay.
He suggests asking ourselves, what's the occasion?
Okay.
How big is the audience?
Right.
What are their interests and backgrounds?
So really understanding the context, the audience, and the purpose of the event.
Yeah. And he also says, to consider our own interests and passions.
Right.
You know, what are we actually excited about?
What do we want to share with the world?
Exactly.
Because if we're not passionate,
it's going to show.
Right. It'll come across in our delivery.
Enthusiasm is contagious, right?
It is.
When we're genuinely excited about something, it shines through.
Okay. So it's about finding that sweet spot where our interests, the audience's needs, and the purpose of the event align.
Yeah. Like a Venn diagram.
And it all overlaps. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. I like that. Now, once we have a topic, how do we gather and organize all the material?
Carnegie was a big fan of note-taking.
Really?
Keep a notebook handy, jot down ideas, observations, quotes, anything that could be useful.
So he was always collecting those little nuggets.
Always. He even had a system for organizing his notes.
He did. I remember reading about that. He categorized his notes by topic.
Right.
And he even had a general index for his library.
He was a master of information management.
It's inspiring.
It shows the value of being a lifelong learner and curator of knowledge.
Okay, so organization is key.
The more organized we are, the easier it is to access that information.
Right. I need to revamp my note-taking system.
Me too.
Now, we've gathered our material, but how do we structure a speech?
Right.
We have all these ideas.
Right.
How do we arrange them to make sense and keep the audience engaged?
Carnegie is very clear and practical about this process.
Okay.
He talks about different organizational patterns. Chronological order, problem solution,
okay,
or topical.
Yeah.
It all depends on the speech and your message.
So there's no one right way.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
You choose the best structure for the content and the audience.
Okay, that makes sense.
And he stresses logical flow.
Right.
Create a clear path for your audience.
Like you're guiding them through your ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not a jumbled mess.
No, no.
It's a carefully constructed journey.
A well-structured speech is like a symphony.
Oh, I like that.
With its different movements, crescendos.
The moments of quiet and then the soaring parts. Okay, so we've chosen a topic, gathered our material, and structured our speech. But what about that finishing touch?
What's that?
That title.
The title?
Yeah, it's the first thing people see. It grabs their attention.
It does.
Carnegie has a whole section dedicated to this.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. He says a good title sparks curiosity and sets the stage for what's to come.
Okay.
And he gives a lot of different examples.
Okay, like what?
Well, some are straightforward, like Henry Watterson's The New Americanism.
Okay, like that.
While others are more thought-provoking, like Russell Conwell's Acres of Diamonds.
More symbolic.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And some even use a striking phrase from the speech itself, like Albert Beveridge's Past Prosperity around.
Oh, yeah. That makes you want to know more.
Right. It piques your interest.
It does.
You know, it's like that saying, don't judge a book by its cover.
But we all do.
Yeah.
We all do.
A compelling title is like that eye-catching cover.
Exactly.
That makes you want to pick it up and dive in.
A great speech title offers a glimpse of what's to come.
Okay, so we've written our speech, practiced our delivery, even got that killer title. But what about our voice?
Ah, yes, the voice.
It's our instrument. It's how we convey everything, our message, our emotions, our personality. What does Carnegie say about our vocal skills?
He spends several chapters on vocal techniques, starting with breathing.
Breathing.
He makes a great point about how most of us are shallow breathers because of, you know, modern life.
We're always sitting.
Yeah, being sedentary.
So we don't breathe deeply enough.
Right. And he even gives specific exercises.
Oh, wow.
To help us retrain our breathing muscles.
It's fascinating how something so basic can have such a huge impact.
Deeper breaths give us more control, more power, more stamina.
And when we're breathing properly, it calms our nerves too, right?
Yes. And it allows our voice to just flow.
Okay. So that's the foundation.
Uh-huh.
Now what?
Then he talks about having a relaxed throat.
Okay.
You know, avoid tension.
Yeah.
He actually suggests yawning, but then speaking. Instead of finishing the yawn.
That sounds a little strange.
It does.
But I've heard that before. It's about creating that open feeling.
Exactly. Oh, opening up that resonating chamber.
I'll have to try it.
And, of course, clear articulation, pronunciation.
Right. No mumbling.
No mumbling. Enunciate those words.
Yeah. Okay.
He even provides those tongue twisters, remember?
Yeah.
The one about foolish, Flavius flushing feverishly.
Oh, I can never say that one.
Me neither.
But they train your mouth to form words clearly.
Exactly.
And then varying our inflection to avoid that monotone delivery.
Right. He compares it to, you know, singing up and down the scale.
Yeah, adding those natural rises and falls.
Yeah.
It keeps things interesting.
It does. Think about it. Yeah. Even a simple phrase like, oh, he's all right.
Yeah.
A rising inflection can mean something totally different than a falling one.
Right.
You can convey so much nuance with your voice.
That's amazing.
Carnegie was a master at that.
He also talks about voice charm.
Voice charm. What's that?
That quality that makes people want to listen.
Oh,
that magnetism in your voice.
I like that.
That pulls people in.
Makes you hang on every word.
Yeah, exactly.
He compares it to a beautiful instrument, you know, one that's played with skill and sensitivity.
He even suggests practicing while feeling happy.
Really?
Yeah, because it translates to a more appealing tone.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's like infuse your voice with the energy you want to project.
Okay.
If you want to inspire joy, speak with joy.
I love that.
And he reminds us not to force our voice if we're hoarse.
Okay.
And avoid drinking cold water while speaking.
Oh, I'm so guilty of that.
I know, me too. Especially when I'm nervous.
But it constricts your vocal cords.
It does.
Yeah, making it harder to produce a clear sound.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
Now, let's move on to gestures. We touched on this before, but Carnegie has a whole chapter on spontaneous gestures.
Yeah, he really goes into detail there.
He's adamant that they should flow naturally.
Not forced or artificial.
He tells another one of his funny stories.
Oh, I love those.
About a gesture class that totally misinterprets a Shakespeare scene.
Oh, no.
I know. It's hilarious.
Let have it.
Well, he tells the story about how they were working on a scene from Shakespeare.
Okay.
And they had a manual that said, for a particular line, they should throw their arms out wide.
Okay.
But it was a moment of defeat for the character, so it completely missed the mark.
Oh, wow.
So it's about finding that balance.
Between intentionality and spontaneity.
Exactly. We want our gestures to be meaningful.
But not overthink them.
Right. We don't want them to be distractions.
Oh, yeah.
It's that dance between our internal state and our outward expression.
And he points out that our gestures should also match the size of our audience.
Right. It's all about context.
Yeah. He says, a sweeping gesture that would be fine for 10,000 people would look ridiculous in front of 100.
That's a great point.
It is.
Okay, so we've covered breathing, voice, gestures. What else?
He has a whole chapter called Acquiring the Manuscript Habit.
Now that sounds a bit counterintuitive.
It does.
To everything we've been talking about.
It seems like it goes against spontaneity.
Yeah.
But he makes a strong argument for writing out your speeches.
Really?
He says it forces you to clarify your thoughts and choose your words carefully.
Hmm.
It's like refining your ideas.
Okay.
Distilling them to their essence.
So even if we don't read it word for word.
Right.
It helps us internalize the structure and flow.
Exactly.
So it's like having that blueprint, even if we deviate from it.
It gives you that foundation of clarity.
Okay.
But still allows for flexibility.
But he says this takes practice and discipline.
It does.
He encourages speakers to challenge themselves by writing out speeches on all sorts of topics.
Oh, wow.
Even if they never plan to give them.
Like practicing scales.
Exactly.
It hones your skills.
Okay, so we've written the speech, we've practiced. Now, what about memory?
That's a big one for a lot of people.
It is. I get nervous about forgetting what I'm going to say.
Carnegie tackles that in his chapter, Memory Training.
Okay.
He emphasizes that memory is like a muscle. The more you use it,
the stronger it gets.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's not about just having a good or bad memory.
Right.
We can actively work to improve it.
Yes. He gives a number of techniques for doing just that.
Like what?
Repetition association and visualization.
So repetition makes sense, but how do association and visualization work?
Well, association is linking new info to something you already know.
Okay.
Like trying to remember a new name, you might link it to a physical feature.
Okay.
And visualization is creating mental images.
So instead of just trying to remember a bunch of facts,
yeah.
You create a mental picture that connects them.
Exactly.
Okay. That's cool.
And he also suggests things like mnemonics.
Oh, yeah, like acronyms and rhymes.
Right, to jog your memory.
Those can be really helpful. And he says that the better we know our material, the easier it is to remember.
Oh, excellent.
It's like the information becomes part of our understanding.
Not just floating around in our short-term memory.
Right, exactly. And he has a great tip for overcoming stage fright that involves visualization.
What's that?
He says to picture yourself delivering the speech confidently and successfully.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's like creating a mental movie.
I love that.
Of your triumph.
It boosts your confidence.
It does. It's like pre-paving that neural pathway to success.
It's training your mind to see a positive outcome.
Okay, so we picture ourselves succeeding. Now, we've explored a lot about preparation, delivery, memory.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the content itself? What makes a speech impactful and memorable?
Right. Carnegie dedicates several chapters to what he calls modes of appeal, starting with influencing by exposition.
Okay, so exposition is about explaining and clarifying, right?
It's about making things clear for your audience.
Right.
He emphasizes using clear language, concrete examples, logical reasoning.
No jargon.
No jargon. Keep it simple.
Clarity is king.
It is.
Yeah.
And he also talks about different methods of exposition.
Like what?
Definition, analysis, comparison, contrast.
So we're not just throwing information at people.
No, we're shaping it.
Presenting it in a way that's engaging.
Right. The goal of exposition is to inform and educate.
Okay, so exposition is about informing. What about persuading? Persuasion.
Most speeches at some level are trying to persuade.
They are.
Convince the audience to think or feel a certain way.
And Carnegie has a whole chapter on that, too.
Okay.
He outlines different strategies for appealing to emotion, logic, and ethics.
So you need to connect on multiple levels
to
truly persuade someone intellectually, emotionally, and ethically.
And he talks about establishing your credibility, building rapport, addressing counterarguments.
So not just presenting a one-sided argument.
No, acknowledge those other viewpoints.
And address them respectfully.
Exactly. It's about building trust, creating a dialogue, even when there's disagreement.
Even when there's disagreement.
I like that. And what about the role of storytelling?
Oh, stories are powerful.
Yeah.
Humor, vivid language.
It's like, don't just tell me, show me.
Exactly.
Use that language to paint pictures.
And he stresses the importance of sincerity.
Right, genuine belief.
He says, no Mirabeau, Napoleon, Burns, Cromwell, no man adequate to do anything, but is first of all in right earnest about it.
Wow, I like that.
It's powerful.
True persuasion comes from believing in what you're saying.
It does.
People can sense when we're being fake.
They can.
It hurts our credibility.
It does.
Okay, so we've talked about exposition, persuasion. Are there other modes of appeal?
He has a fascinating chapter on influencing by suggestion,
Okay.
which goes even deeper into the psychology of persuasion.
This is getting into how our minds
It
work.
is.
Yeah.
He explores how authority, repetition, and emotions can influence us.
Okay.
For example, if an authority figure says something, we're more likely to believe them, even without examining the evidence ourselves.
We tend to trust people who seem knowledgeable,
We do.
and then there's repetition. The more we hear something, the more we believe it.
It's true.
Like that saying, a lie told often enough becomes the true.
Exactly.
Hmm.
And he also talks about emotional appeals,
Okay.
like in advertising.
Oh, right.
Advertisers are masters at them.
They play on our emotions
They
to
do.
influence our buying decisions.
They link their products to happiness, success.
I see.
They know those emotions can make us act impulsively.
It's like he's showing us the hidden machinery of persuasion.
Exactly. But he's not saying to use these techniques to manipulate people.
No, of course not.
He's saying these are powerful tools.
That can be used ethically.
Exactly.
It's like any tool, like a hammer.
A hammer.
It can be used to
Or
build.
to break.
Right.
It's up to us to use it responsibly.
Okay, so it's about understanding these techniques, but using them for good.
Yeah. And he also talks about the power of our subconscious mind
Oh, wow.
and how we can use it to reach our goals.
Okay.
This is where it connects to self-help and personal development.
Yeah.
Because to influence others,
Yeah.
we first need to understand ourselves.
So all these different modes of appeal,
Exposition, persuasion,
they
suggestion.
work together
They do.
to create that impact.
Like weaving a tapestry.
Yeah.
Understanding your audience, crafting your message, delivering it with skill and conviction.
It's about connecting with people on a deeper level.
Carnegie also talks about description and narration,
Okay.
which are essential for engaging the imagination.
Bringing our speeches to life.
Exactly. He talks about using vivid language.
Sensory details.
Yes.
So it's not just conveying information.
It's about creating an experience
Painting pictures with our words.
and transporting the audience.
I like that.
He even uses examples from literature and history.
So we need to be students of language.
We do.
Explore the nuances of words.
And he encourages us to be storytellers.
Because stories connect us,
They teach us.
inspire us.
It's part of what makes us human.
Okay, we've covered so much today, from the power of a well-stocked mind to efficient preparation to choosing a topic, crafting a title, vocal technique, gestures, and different modes of appeal. Is there anything else from Carnegie before we move on?
He has a chapter on platform presence.
Platform
I
presence.
think it's still relevant today.
Even in our world of virtual presentations.
Even if you're not on a stage, your presence still matters.
Right. It can make or break a message,
It can.
whether it's a live audience or online.
Carnegie talks about projecting confidence,
Okay.
eye contact, commanding the space.
Even if it's the screen,
Exactly.
he stresses being present.
Both physically and mentally.
It's not just being there, it's being engaged.
He says, if people on the street turn around and watch your walk is more important than you are, change it. If the attention of your audience is called to your gestures, they are not convincing. It's about knowing how you're perceived.
And making sure you're not distracting.
Exactly.
Okay, so posture, movement, facial
They
expressions,
all matter.
they all communicate, even if we don't realize it.
It's that first impression. It
Right.
sets the tone.
And he also has a chapter on meeting the needs of the occasion, adaptability, because every situation is different.
Every situation is
We
different.
need to adjust our approach.
He gives guidance on how to do that, whether
Yeah.
it's a formal presentation,
Okay.
a casual talk,
Yeah.
or something impromptu.
So it's not about memorizing a set of rules,
No, it's about being flexible.
reading the room, adjusting accordingly.
And he even talks about how to handle interruptions, hecklers,
Oh, yeah.
those unexpected challenges.
Because things don't always go as planned,
They don't
especially
really.
when you're speaking in front of people.
Carnegie gives practical advice for dealing with those tricky situations.
Okay, so we've explored Carnegie's insights into preparation, delivery, memory, content, even platform presence. We've talked about his anecdotes,
his analogy,
his tips and techniques. And even though his work is from a different time, it's still so relevant.
And there's still more to come.
Stay tuned for part 3 of our deep dive.
We'll explore types of speeches, the art of conversation, and Carnegie's final thoughts on the power of having something to say.
Back for more of Dale Carnegie's The Art of Public Speaking.
We've come a long way, haven't we?
We have. From stage fright to crafting a message, we've covered a lot.
But there's still a bit more to uncover.
There are a few more gems to dig up, right?
In the last part, we talked about adapting to the occasion.
Right.
And Carnegie takes this even further. He gives advice for different types of speeches.
Oh, like specific categories.
Yeah. He breaks down things like the after-dinner speech, the eulogy, and even the dreaded impromptu speech.
Impromptu speeches, ugh.
They can be tough.
He acknowledges that each type has its own challenges, so we need to tailor our approach.
He gives this example with the after-dinner speech. He talks about the balance between humor and seriousness.
Oh.
He says you shouldn't use this lighthearted occasion to get into heated debates.
Right, that would kill the mood.
Exactly. He actually says some imprudent souls seem to select the most friendly of after-dinner occasions for the explosion of a bombshell of dispute.
That's a great way to put it.
So he's encouraging humor, but always being sensitive to the occasion.
Makes total sense. You wouldn't tell jokes at a funeral, right?
No, you wouldn't.
And you wouldn't give a somber lecture at a birthday party.
Right. It's all about reading the room.
Understanding the unspoken expectations.
And with the eulogy, he really emphasizes sincerity and respect.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance, honoring the person's life,
right,
but also offering comfort to those who are grieving.
And what about impromptu speaking?
Ugh, I hate those. Put on the spot.
We've all been there, right?
Yeah, it's terrifying. What does Carnegie say about those?
Well, he gives a great tip.
Okay.
Have few go-to stories or anecdotes ready.
Oh, that's a good one.
Things you can adapt to different situations.
Okay, so having a few well-rehearsed stories
can really save you.
Yeah, those can be a lifesaver. But what about staying calm?
He stresses that too.
Staying focused when you feel caught off guard.
He says the audience is usually more forgiving than we think.
Especially when they know it's impromptu.
Right. So it's about trusting yourself.
Believing in your ability to speak effectively.
Even without tons of prep.
And sometimes that spontaneity can actually make it more engaging, right?
Absolutely. Right. It feels more authentic.
Now, beyond specific speech types, Carnegie talks about the broader social side of communication.
Oh, you mean conversation?
Yeah, he has a whole chapter on it.
He does. And he makes this great point about how conversation signifies in the original a turnabout exchange of ideas, yet most people seem to regard it as a monologue.
Wow, that's so true. We're often just trying to get our own points across.
Right. We're not really listening.
He wants us to shift our perspective.
Yeah, be genuinely interested in the other person.
Ask questions, listen to their responses.
Actually listen.
Be present in the moment.
Not just waiting for your turn to speak.
And be mindful of our language, right?
Uh-huh. Use those precise words.
So that we're conveying our meaning clearly.
It's about being intentional.
Words can build bridges.
Or create walls.
He even talks about difficult conversations.
Oh, yeah. Those tough ones.
How to disagree with grace.
Maintaining respect.
Even when we disagree.
Finding common ground.
Because even in those heated debates, we're still talking to a human being.
Exactly.
He sees conversation as a skill we can improve, just like public speaking.
And it makes us better communicators everywhere. Not just on stage.
Right. It helps in our personal and professional lives.
All those interactions.
Now, as we wrap up our deep dive, it's important to remember one of Carnegie's most important points.
Which is?
Having something worthwhile to say.
He reminds us that technique isn't everything.
Right. We can master all the techniques.
But if our message doesn't resonate.
If we're not passionate about it, it's going to fall flat.
He says it so well. Your success or failure as a speaker will be determined very largely by your thoughts and your mental attitude.
It's about our mindset.
Our beliefs, our values.
Those are the source of our words.
He wants us to cultivate a positive mindset.
Believe in ourselves.
Believe in our ability to make a difference.
He even tells this inspiring story about a student who struggled with public speaking.
Oh, really?
But he was so determined to improve.
And he did.
He did. He became a skilled and confident speaker.
Wow, that's encouraging.
It shows the power of perseverance.
And believing in yourself.
Exactly.
Carnegie's message is clear. Anyone can master public speaking.
Anyone who's willing to learn.
So there you have it. our deep dive into the art of public speaking.
It's a book that keeps inspiring speakers even all these years later.
From facing our fears to finding our voice.
Crafting a message that matters.
Carnegie gives us the tools to become better communicators.
More confident speakers.
And even experienced speakers can learn something new, right? Absolutely. It's always good to go back to the basics.
He leaves us with this. If you want to be enthusiastic, act enthusiastic.
Simple, but powerful.
Action precedes feeling.
Embody the qualities you want to project.
And you'll cultivate them from within.
I love that.
So go out there and speak with passion.
With conviction.
Connect with your audience.
You might surprise yourself with the impact you can have.
And remember, as Carnegie reminds us, it is not only from untaught speakers that we hear such slovenly articulations as column for column and pretty for pretty, but even great orators occasionally offend quite as unblushingly as less noted mortals.
Even the best can make mistakes.
So we can all benefit from a little refresher.
Always room for improvement.
Until next time. Happy speaking.